who went sky high for the board. It's a lob to Vic, and a slam, a two-hand thunder jam, and KU takes a two-point lead. Timeout Iowa State, and this place is rocking in Allen Fieldhouse. Wow.
It was a great college game, and you know, we played from behind or played with no momentum the vast majority of it. They were so much faster than us earlier, and they moved the ball a lot faster than we could recover and react. And second half, we actually guarded them better, a lot better. But we did a lot of good things. Devon, you know, he had 8-0, and he drove the ball downhill so good. And Diedrich was unbelievable, and Legero made some big shots. And Ochai, you know, came in, and, you know, it's really not fair to put Och in that situation. He gets 8 points and 5 rebounds and in 16 minutes before he fouls out. But, you know, Marcus Garrett, how good was he again? Now, granted, he missed 3 free throws that could have iced the game for us, but still, though, he did so many good things. And we competed harder down the stretch, and we had some guys make some plays.
That's what Kansas does to win the Big 12 every year. They find ways to make plays, whether it be on the road or at home, more so at home this year so far. KU atop the Big 12 at 5-2 with a much-needed win over Iowa State last night, 80-76. Diedrich Lawson, 29 points, 15 rebounds. Your coach Self talk about how great Marcus Garrett was, and Ochai Agbaji came up big there in limited minutes because he was in some foul trouble. And Kansas, Devin Dotson, nice game, didn't turn the ball over. KU wins, didn't look good there for a while. They were down 8 in the second half, but KU typically finds a way to win against most teams at Allen Fieldhouse, and they did it again last night. So KU atop the Big 12 by half a game. K-State can join KU atop the Big 12 standings and have a share of first place if they can win tonight against Texas Tech. We'll talk more about that in a moment. KU now 28-0 under Bill Self on Big Monday. You don't want to play Bill Self on Big Monday is what we're basically saying. That's just not something that's going to end well for you. All right, before we get to the games tonight, we didn't have a chance to talk about this real quick yesterday, but just a quick overview of the Bullet Wrestling Invitational that took place over the weekend. And Zane Colson, Bullet, was a champion. Do we have other area champions?
He was the only champion. Jacob Conrad of Smith Center at 138 finished in second place there. But other than that, Creighton Johnson, River Paula, Beloit were fourth place. Those were the top other finishers from the area. Beloit finished in fifth place as a team there this weekend. The Blue Valley Southwest won the tournament for the third consecutive year. All the results, if you're looking for them, can all be found online at ncksports.com if you missed anything from Friday and Saturday from the Bullet Invite. So, and then we'll talk with coaches coming up tonight that were competing there as well in our wrestling locker room chats about 5:10 this evening here on Kitty Country 94. So that'll give you a recap of how their teams individually fared this weekend.
All right, the latest KBCA rankings have been released.
Yes, just really a couple immediate area teams that are in those rankings. 3A boys, Beloit's number 4, Osborne's number 9, and 1A boys, and then other area league schools that are ranked. And 3A boys, Phillipsburg number 5 from the MCL, Sacred Heart, who's coming into Beloit tonight, is number 6 in Class 2A. And then on the girls' side from the MCL, Norton, number 7 in Class 3A, and Trigo's number 4 in Class 2A. So those are the area leagues that have teams that are ranked here this week in the KBCA rankings.
All right, big game tonight on the boys' side on the radio. Our broadcast schedule here tonight, we've got Lincoln at Lakeside, weather permitting, Katie Kunch 94, katiekunch94.com, and Sacred Heart at Beloit, always a good rivalry on Z96.3 Lake, and katiekunch94.com, live video stream at ncksports.com. Via the Beloit Trojan Channel. And the girls game pits two teams with winning records, Sacred Heart 8-3, Beloit 7-5. Important game in league play. The marquee game tonight, it has to, no offense to the ladies, but when you have a battle of two state ranked teams, that's the marquee game.
Yeah.
And it'd be the same thing if the girls had two ranked teams, it'd be a marquee game. The Beloit boys ranked, as Dusty just said, 4th in the state in 3A, and the Sacred Heart boys are ranked 6th in 2A. Sacred Heart's 9-2. Beloit is 11-1 coming off the Sterling Tournament Championship, and Sacred Heart has not played for over a week now because they didn't play in a midseason tournament. They've chosen not to play in a midseason tournament the last couple of years and just pick up some games here and there to fill out their schedule, which their coach told me yesterday they seems to be working for them so far. So they're going to stick with that, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. And Beloit won the Sterling Tournament, and it's tough to turn around after the emotional high beating Hutch Trinity on Friday at Sterling by 12. Good win for Beloit, but now Sterling Invitational in the books. They now look to win a league title, and if you're going to win the league, You got to knock off the reigning champion.
We've had letdowns, it seems like, a lot after this tournament. We come out on Tuesday against a really good Sacred Heart team, and over the years, you know, partly because they've always been good, we seem to struggle a little bit. But for us, you know, our goals this year, we want to win. We wanted to win Sterling. We got that done in our league, so, you know, something we want to win. And you've got to go through Sacred Heart right now if you want to get that done.
Sacred Heart's owned the league the last few years, and somebody needs to knock them off. If somebody needs to knock them off, it's probably Beloit's got the best chance to knock off Sacred Heart atop the league standing. It's a huge game tonight, especially Beloit, since it's at home. Sacred Heart at Beloit. They will play just twice this year. They're not in the same substate because they're in different classifications. There have been some years where Beloit and Sacred Heart were at the same class in Class 3 and some substates, although that's been a few years. So Beloit hosting Sacred Heart tonight should be good ball games on Z96.3 Lake. Rest of our schedule, Dusty, a couple games have been postponed already.
Yeah, Southern Cloud at Sylvan Lucas and Pike Valley at Thunder Ridge have both been postponed for tonight. So if and when we get those new dates, we'll pass them along to you here on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Sports. Also, St. John's Tipton scheduled to be at Bennington tonight, Wilson at Osborne, Rock Hills hosting Tescott, and also Russell at Smith Center, and as we mentioned a little bit ago, Lincoln at Lakeside on Katy Country 94 here this evening with pregame at 5:50 and tip 6 for the girls, and the boys game to follow here tonight.
All right, the new top 25 college basketball men's poll has been released. Here are the rankings. Tennessee is number one. Well, isn't Texas glad they got rid of Rick Barnes? I mean, he just couldn't coach. Rick Barnes has led Tennessee to number one ranking. He had Texas number one at one point in time when he was head coach at Texas. Duke's number two, Virginia three, Gonzaga four, Michigan five, Michigan State six, Nevada seven, Kentucky eight, Kansas is at number nine, Virginia Tech at 10, Texas Tech at number 14, and Iowa State 24. Of course, KB and Iowa State last night, 80-76. Number 14, Texas Tech, is at K-State tonight. K-State receiving votes, but not in the top 25. And KU will be at Kentucky coming up Saturday, 4:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake. A battle of blue bloods down in Lexington. That should be a good ball game between KU and Kentucky. All right, we know all about the disappointment of our Chiefs fans. And the more I think about the Chiefs game against the Patriots, the tougher it is for me to swallow because they were so close. And you think about so many little things that easily could have gone the Chiefs' way. You know, Chris Hogan make an unbelievable one-handed catch on a third down play that some people still question whether that was a catch or not. I don't focus on Julian Edelman, whether his thumb touched the ball or not, because two plays later the Chiefs got a pick and then scored. So it's irrelevant, and I don't know why people waste time talking about that call, because that honestly could have gone either way. I don't know how you had anything conclusive for sure to overturn the call myself.
Exactly.
But that's beside the point. But everybody wants to point to the Dee Ford penalty, and I get it. I do get it, that Dee Ford was offsides. And here's what Andy Reid had to say about the penalty where that negated interception, in which more than likely would have put the Chiefs in the Super Bowl in Atlanta.
I thought it was legitimate. He was. It looked like, on the angle of our camera at least, that he might have been off by a tad. Normally you're warned and the coach is warned if somebody's doing that before they throw in a game with that magnitude. But they did. And he didn't waste any time doing it. He didn't wait till the interception to throw it. He had his hand on his flag right from the get-go. So he saw it on his angle and felt that that was the call.
It's interesting. Andy Reid says he went back at the tape and the official threw the flag right away. Max Kellerman's on national television talking about how the Patriots are so lucky and the flag came in late and negated interception. Well, one thing's true and one thing's not.
Yeah.
And I would go with Andy Reid on this one.
Yeah, I don't
because
think he'd
the
be
talking,
making that up.
No, I don't think he would be either. If it was coming in really late, I think Andy would say, hey,
he
it came
know,
in late.
He'd say, yeah.
I think he'd say it out of frustration. You know, the whole warning somebody, see, listen, here's my thing with that. And I mean no disrespect towards Dee Ford, but that's football 101, man. I mean, you shouldn't need another grown man to tell you whether or not, hey, man, you're offsides, you need to move back.
Yeah,
I mean, this isn't peewee football, all right? This is professional football.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a while.
So, and Dee Ford says, I couldn't see the ball. I need to see the ball. That's why he moved up and he was in the neutral zone. Well, then that means somebody else is in the neutral zone, doesn't it? Because somebody's blocking his view. So I don't buy that completely either. I know it's important to get a great jump off the ball, so that you can get to the quarterback and get a strip sack. And you're talking a tenth of a second can be the difference between Brady getting rid of the ball and getting hit and fumbling it. So I understand why it's so important to get a great jump off the ball, but I don't really completely buy it. I mean, if you can't see the ball, if you have to be offsides to see the ball, that means somebody else is probably offsides, or you haven't taken the right angle to see. I mean, maybe a helmet's in your way, which still, you know, that's probably in the neutral zone. I mean, I heard a sports talk show host yesterday put the entire game on Dee Ford. He just absolutely said it's Dee Ford's fault. He put it all on one person. And, you know, that's for the simple-minded people out there. That's, and I don't mean that in disrespect. For the simple-minded people out there that want to make everything black and white, then you can say that. Now, what this sports talk show host in Kansas City did not add is that the Patriots had three timeouts and that the Chiefs would have run the ball three times. The Patriots would have had some time on the clock, more than likely. But we don't know. It is a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Just like the Chiefs could have, you know, got the ball and ran it for 10 yards in the first down, and the Patriots would have been done. We'll never know. And I don't blame the official for throwing the penalty, because if he's lined up in the neutral zone, he's lined up in the neutral zone. Now, the problem I have with that type of penalty, although the official doesn't know this, and if he picks it up after the fact, it looks really bad, is how do you know if that play is going to have an impact, that offsides? Because Max Kellerman says, well, it had nothing and no bearing on the play. Okay, so if it had a bearing on the play and the flag's thrown out way late, the official waiting to see if that has a bearing on the play, the official gets ripped for throwing a complete late flag, right?
Yeah.
If you throw the flag right away, which is what he's supposed to do, and Dee Ford never gets close to the quarterback, which in this play he didn't, and Brady throws the interception, it's going to be complete controversy if he picks up the flag waving off a neutral zone violation.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Max Kellerman and all these people in the world want the official to do. Dee Ford was lined up offsides. Andy Reid admits he was lined up offsides.
Yeah, you can see it.
This is not a controversy.
Yeah.
He was offsides, and it's the right call by the official. It is. Well, did they blow a call with the roughing the passer with the Chiefs on Brady? Absolutely. That was a horrible call. But there were calls that went the Chiefs' ways as well. And I'm speaking as a Chiefs fan, but I can at least be objective to understand there were calls that went against both teams. And when we get caught up as fans saying, well, the Chiefs gave away 3 points in the first half with the Mahomes sack, and they did this and they did that and they made this mistake, you're also forgetting that if you're a Patriot fan, you say, well, if we didn't throw a pick in the end zone, we'd be up 14-0, and this game doesn't come down to the wire.
Yeah.
So it's convenient to always look at what your team did wrong, and like the other team did everything right. Well, the other team didn't. They made mistakes too. The problem is the biggest mistake of the game, at least to most, would be that D4 lined up offsides. The penalty was called, which was the right call. It did have no bearing on the play because Ford never came close to the quarterback. Max Kellerman's right. It had no bearing on the play, but that's not how you make calls as officials. I know it's unfortunate. I hate to see a block 25 yards away from a kick return for a touchdown, but if you blocked in the back, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what else we're supposed to do. Turn a blind eye. Don't have officials. The officials are human. They're going to make mistakes. They made a big mistake in the Saints-Rams game. But once again, I go back to, well, the Saints got away with two delay of game penalties and two face mask calls that were not called. That's four calls that went against the Rams. So yeah. You can sit here and you can say, well, that call decided the game between the Saints and the Rams. Yes, but had the other calls been made properly, just like that one, the game would have been different. The Rams probably would have been up 24-20, and the Saints wouldn't have settled for a field goal. Okay? I mean, Goff was face masked.
Yeah.
At the one-yard line, and they had fourth down. They kicked the field goal to tie it. The Rams did. So we can always point, as this sports talk show host Kansas City can do, which I think is he's making it black and white. He's doing it for the fans. He's finding a scapegoat. People could argue I have a scapegoat, and that's Bob Sutton. Listen, I've been consistent with Bob Sutton for 3 years.
Yeah, you're not making that up.
I'm not making that off of one game. I'm making it off of the whole season. All right, if Bob Sutton had one bad game as defensive coordinator, I'm not going to fire the guy, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to fire Dee Ford and get him from my team because he was lined up all sides. Without Dee Ford, the Chiefs don't get where they are. The Chiefs don't make it the AFC title game without Dee Ford. There's no question about it. But it's unfortunate, and this sports talk show just puts it all on one guy. He just says it's all Dee Ford's fault. You know, you lined up off sides, and You know, I'll say it again. I have a bigger problem with Dee Ford not showing up in regards to he didn't make a tackle, he didn't get a pressure, he didn't make any kind of significant play in the game except the one everybody remembers. I have a bigger problem with that than I do him lining off sides. A lot of pass rushers line up in the neutral zone and sometimes get away with it, which leads to the, well, why did the official call this one in such a big game? And Andy Reid, as we just heard him say, well, a lot of times in a game of this magnitude, you get warned about that. Maybe he's been warned already earlier in the game and he still didn't listen. I don't think you need to be warned. You know the rules. I mean, what's next? The official got to warn the corner? Hey, man, you can't interfere with the receiver when the ball's in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You should know to be lined up the right way to where you're not offsides. You're not lined up offsides. That's pretty simple, okay? It's football 101. You have the right amount of guys on the line of scrimmage. When a guy's off the line of scrimmage, should be up a foot or two, gets called for illegal formation, that is on the player, and it's not on the official. It's not their job to tell you how to play other than enforce the rules that everybody should know. So I really find that, I don't know, cheap and weak to say, well, you know, usually gets warned about it. That's a bit of a cop-out. It protects Dee Ford a little bit. But Andy Reid says he was offsides. Listen, the Dee Ford penalty wasn't the reason the Chiefs lost the game, per se. If you want to say, well, the Chiefs win the game had the penalty not been called so that you'd connect the dots, I get that. I really do get that. But let's think back to so many plays in this game. We can go back to what if Mahomes doesn't take a sack and gives up 3 points in the first half? What happens if Tom Brady doesn't throw a pick? How's that game different? What if Tyreek Hill doesn't run backwards 12 yards on a punt return? What if Travis Kelce catches a pass on 2nd and 15 deep in their own territory? What if Mahomes hits a wide-open Damian Williams on a wheel route early in the game? What if Tom Brady doesn't have a laser pointed at his face from the stands and throws a pick to Julian Edelman off his hands? I mean, we can go back and forth for both teams. What if, what if, what if? Here's the thing I say. And I had somebody yesterday say on social media to me, the game was lost in the first quarter when our offense stunk and our defense struggled. No, it wasn't. How do you figure? I would say if the Chiefs would end up never getting the lead, yes, you may be able to argue that. The Chiefs came back and led 21-17, 28-24. So that's where you pick it up at. Forget everything up to that point. I mean, seriously, forget everything up to that point. And here's why. If you want to whine about Mahomes giving up 3 points, I get it. But you also are forgetting the Patriots gave up at least three, if not seven, by throwing a pick in the end zone at the one-yard line. So that's convenient, okay? So you could argue the Chiefs gave up 3 points, the Patriots gave up 3 points. Okay, cancels itself out, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it just depends how you want to spin this to make your argument better than anybody else's. But here's my argument. Despite those mistakes by Mahomes, a couple of mistakes, he made, didn't make a right throw, he took a sack, all right? Tyreek Hill going backwards, Travis Kelce dropping a pass. After all of that happened, and Tom Brady made his mistakes, after all of that happened, and the defense, you know, was gouged in the running game, the first drive of the game, the Patriots took 8 minutes off the clock, went down and scored. Forget that as well. Forget what the defense did in the first half, which wasn't great. Everybody thinks they went great. They held them to 14 points. The Patriots punted on a 4th-and-1. They could have got more points had they gone for it. And they threw a pick in the end zone. They should have had 21 or 28 points, and this would have been a blowout. So don't give me this defense was great in the first half stuff. But I do agree the offense was really bad in the first half based on Chiefs' level of success in the past. So forget everything. Move up to when the Chiefs had the lead. That's called winning time. You get the lead twice in the fourth quarter. You have to close it. You're at home. Dee Ford has a penalty that negates an interception. I get that. But the Chiefs still had the Patriots on a 3rd-and-5. They still had a chance to get a deflection at the line of scrimmage. They still had a chance to make a play with their corner. They still had a chance to make a play and get a pass rush, which they never got the entire game. And that's on Dee Ford, Justin Houston, and everybody else that couldn't. That's on Bob Sutton for not creating pressure and not blitzing. Okay? The Chiefs in overtime, the Chiefs had the Patriots in 3rd-and-9, 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-10. But it's Dee Ford's fault they lost the game because he lined up offsides. But if Charvarius Ward doesn't catch that ball, it's all different, isn't it? Well, Dee Ford, he was offsides. Well, you know, it would have been 4th down. Well, the Patriots would have gone for it. And then people would have said, well, we would have stopped on a 4th-and-5 if Dee Ford wasn't offsides. No, you don't know that. a complete hypothetical. That's why I don't like dealing with hypotheticals. The fact of the matter is, Dee Ford made a mistake. But to put the entire loss on Dee Ford is absolutely, completely unfair.
Oh, without question.
Anybody that coaches, anybody that's ever played the game in any sport, you sit here at the end of a basketball.
Patriots ran 92 plays.
94 plays.
Or 94 plays.
They had twice
as many plays
exactly than the Chiefs offense.
So that was one play.
One of 94.
Of 94.
150 in the game.
So, yeah.
150 in the game.
And it's just like, stop on one of those other 94, okay?
Any penalty that was called on either team, what if they didn't make that penalty earlier in the game? It changes the complexion of the game, possibly. Here's the thing. Listen, when you're at the end of an NBA basketball game or a college basketball game or a high school game, and your team's down one, and you're at the foul line for two free throws, and you miss both free throws, are you going to say after the game, that kid lost the game for us? And a lot of people around here won't say that.
No.
Why? Because he's a high school kid. Well, why not? It's no different than it's a pro guy. What's the difference? Same principle.
Yeah.
Big people won't do that. Why? Because, well, that's kind of inhumane and tough to put on somebody. So the counter argument would be, well, those kids don't get paid. The NFL guys get paid to do it right. I get that argument. I understand that side of it. But these guys are not robots. They are human beings. And we just gave you Patrick Mahomes, the NFL MVP this year. He will be. He made a couple of big-time mistakes. Why isn't people criticizing Patrick Mahomes for costing the team 7-10 points? If Patrick Mahomes, and listen, I'm not saying that I'm blaming Patrick Mahomes. I'm not at all. I think the offense did everything they needed to do in the second half and then some. I put it on the defense, Dee Ford, and the whole defense and Bob Sutton. I don't put it just on Dee Ford. But here's the thing. If Patrick Mahomes makes a pass to Damian Williams for a touchdown and he doesn't take a sack and we kick and make the field goal, Patrick Mahomes cost the Chiefs 10 points.
Those plays and were on D4, the same drive, though, weren't they? Like the missed pass and then he got...
Okay, well, 7 points.
Seven points.
Yeah, all right. Like, okay, 7 points.
That's what's the thing
there. D4 didn't Nobody's cost the Chiefs 7 points. Well, yeah, okay. He cost him 7 points because he went down and scored. Okay, to take the lead. So that cancels each other out. So why isn't people going nuts about Patrick Mahomes making a mistake and missing a wide open running back? Because that happened early in the game.
Yeah.
That's why.
Well, so
if Patrick Mahomes,
that's what's
listen, at the end of the game, if it's 28-24, D Ford is offsides and the Patriots continue their drive and score a touchdown to make it 14-0 in the first half. Okay, let's just flip things. And then Patrick Mahomes misses a wide open Damian Williams in the fourth quarter trying to go down and win the game. And then all they need is a field goal to tie it, and he takes a sack, and they get out of field goal range. Is everybody going to say it was Patrick Mahomes' fault they lost the game, even though he threw for 300 yards and was good everywhere else but had two bad plays?
Yeah,
some people
probably would.
Yeah.
But that's what's interesting about that deal is, like, nobody's talking about the missed pass. They're just talking about the sack that he took. Like, I haven't seen a whole lot of people complaining about the missed throw.
No.
Because I'm pretty sure that was the same drive.
It might have been, where
they were in field goal range in the
pass.
Because that's the only time they got down there in the first half.
Yeah, I think it was.
And they get the big pass to Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
And they got him set up in field goal range. And then right away he missed the pass to Williams on the wheel route.
Yep.
And then he got sacked. And everybody's talking about, well, he gave up 3 points. Well, he gave up 7 points first.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot of people talking about that.
Of course not, because it was early in the game.
Yeah. But they're talking about the field goal, which was at the same point. Like,
right.
It's like, do you want here?
And that's what I say about high school basketball or any basketball level. If you have missed two free throws in the game down one, they'll say, well, the kid cost them the game. What about Johnny that missed 5 free throws in the third quarter?
Yeah. Nobody focuses on
that. No, because you always remember, and that goes back to officiating.
Down the stretch, if it's close, and these are going to decide it.
And the same thing applies to criticizing officiating. The Saints are stuck on that one call. And I get the call. It was an egregious missed call. No question about it. They completely forget all the horrible calls they got away with. It's convenient because it's the last thing we remember. Here's a thought. Don't throw an interception and don't give up pressure on Drew Brees and throw a pick when you won the coin toss. And go down and score and win the game. If you're at home, you won the coin toss, you've got one of the best offenses in football, one of the best quarterbacks in football, go down and score, you win the game. Instead, they're bellyaching about that play, which, once again, we don't know for sure if the kicker would have made the field goal to win it anyway. We all assume they would have made it.
Yeah.
What if it doinks them upright? We've seen that happen a few times in the playoffs already in the regular season. I mean, we just assume everything's going to go the way we think it's going to go after that play. How do we assume... You know, we just assume that the Chiefs are going to run out the clock after that play. And more than likely, they probably do. But we don't know that. And that's why it's so unfair and so short-sighted. And so everybody wants to make things so black and white. And nothing in the world really is black and white when you really break it down. And we just want to we want to point fingers at one person. And some people can come back and say, Wade, you're a hypocrite. You're pointing fingers at Bob Sutton. I'm pointing fingers at the whole defense and Bob Sutton. Okay? And that's been a problem for years. The defense has been a problem for years, not one game. Dee Ford made a big mistake at the worst possible time. I'm not excusing the mistake.
He's also part of that defense, by the way.
He's also part of the defense, which I'm blaming as well. I'm not giving him a free card here, a pass. He made a mistake. But to say that he single-handedly cost them the game,
that
to me is completely unfair. You're basically saying that all the other plays...
Nothing else mattered.
You're saying that every other play that led up to that play meant nothing. What you're saying is every single play up to that play, every single mistake before that, no big deal. We're cool with those mistakes. It just was that mistake. I think that's completely unfair. I think it is fair to say he messed up. He should have been lined up properly, which I just said is football 101. And I don't think you should be warned and allowed to get back online because that's you should know, hey, see the ball, be behind the ball. Like I said, I'm not cutting him slack on that part. No. But I'm not going to go and say that Dee Ford is the reason the Chiefs didn't make the Super Bowl, because I can argue the Chiefs' offensive line did a horrible job in the first half. They give Mahomes more time. The Chiefs score more points. I can argue Justin Houston never got a sack. I can blame Justin Houston. I can blame Eric Berry for not covering Rob Gronkowski on that final pass. I can blame the entire rush defense for not stopping the running game. I can blame Charvarius Ward for not covering Julie Edelman from the slot going in motion on a key third down and nine play. I can blame Chris Hogan for making a great catch for the Patriots. I can blame a whole bunch of people why the Chiefs lost the game.
Yeah.
So how do we just put it on one guy? Because that's the play you say, well, we would have made the Super Bowl had we, you know, that play had stood. And you know what? You might very well be right, but there's 150 plays in the game, but we always remember the last one. And if you put yourself in the shoes of Dee Ford and you put yourself in the shoes of anybody else late in the game in that situation and you make a mistake, you would think a lot differently than what you're saying right now. Because you're a fan, you're a fanatic, and you want to blame somebody. There's blame to go around. I said I blame the defense, Bob Sutton. I'll listen to people wanting to blame the offense for giving up the points we just talked about. Sure, the offense wasn't perfect. It's a collective team effort to lose a game like that. The Chiefs are the first team in AFC championship game history to score 30 points or more at home and lose in the AFC title game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I say the Chiefs did enough offensively. But you may say the offense was the reason they lost the game, which I think is ridiculous.
What do we say going into the game? If the Chiefs score 30, they should win.
And the Chiefs' defense hadn't given up 30 since 2015, and then they gave up 37.
Yeah.
So there you go. The offense did their part. The defense didn't do what they normally did. That's why I blame the defense. But I do not specifically blame Dee Ford. I blame Dee Ford more for not making a single play in the game, let alone making that bad play that cost him the interception. Here's Andy Reid on wanting to get back.
So you've known me a long time. And I'm always going to do what I think is right for the team, try to make it the best possible we can. We were this close on an offsides to being in Atlanta. So I'm going to work like crazy on my end to make sure it's right.
All right, that's Andy Reid. This is the hard part, is you got to wait a full year. We're going to talk more Chiefs here after we get Riley Gates. So stay tuned, more Chiefs talk in a moment. And NBA, quite the performance by an NBA player. That's coming up in just a moment.
Curry finds Thompson right side, loads up another one. Oh, you kidding me? You've got to be kidding me. Ridiculous. Klay Thompson hit it from the sideline, 10 of 10 for three.
Klay Thompson hit 10 consecutive three-pointers. He was 10 of 10 from three for the Warriors last night. He scored 44, and Thompson talked about his hot shooting night.
Took a couple bad shots, a couple heat checks, but they went in tonight, fortunately. When you got the hot hand, you're just looking for that little ounce of space, because all you need is an inch or two, and that thing's just flicking off your wrist so easy, and it just happened to be one of those nights.
It was one of those nights. The Warriors get it done, and the Warriors have been red hot here lately. And 44 points from Klay Thompson the other night, and made 10 consecutive three-pointers. The Warriors still the team to beat in the NBA. Other NBA news, James Harden has scored 30 points or more in 20 straight games as the Rockets have now traded Carmelo Anthony to the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls expected to waive Carmelo, and then he's free to sign with anyone else. I don't know where he would sign, but wherever he goes, that team will probably get worse. That's the way it's been the last few teams that Carmelo, or most of the teams, if not all the teams he's been with, that's how it's gone in his career. Now, what do the Chiefs need to do in the offseason? They do have some tough decisions to make. The Chiefs do have a little bit of salary cap space, but they also have some contracts to take care of. Probably the three question marks for the Chiefs. One, Tyreek Hill. They probably need to sign him to a long-term extension maybe this offseason because he's under contract through 2020 and then be a free agent. Chris Jones, the same situation. We know he had a fantastic year with 15 and a half sacks. But maybe the toughest one to make a decision on, and then again, maybe it's not so tough, is Dee Ford. That's who we talked about earlier, that some people say Dee Ford was the reason the Chiefs lost the game. It's all on Dee Ford and no other mistakes, no other plays in the game decided anything. It was that one play. Dee Ford had a career year. He was fantastic. Rushing the passer, forcing a lot of turnovers. He wasn't great against the run, but he was better against the run than he has been in past years. And the Chiefs could franchise tag Dee Ford, which would cost him about $16.2 million. They could sign him to a long-term deal, or they could let him go. And that's going to be interesting to see how the Chiefs approach things with Dee Ford. This is my opinion. I think you need to keep him around. You invested a high draft pick on him. He showed that maybe he's turning the corner, and let's put aside the fact that he didn't have a good AFC title game. He still had a really good year, and he's a Pro Bowler, but I don't think you give him a long-term deal. Why? Many reasons. One, long-term deals have not worked out well for the Chiefs, and it's strapped them with the cap with Justin Houston. And you can say, well, Houston's playing now, yeah, but he missed a lot of time and gave him a lot of money. Eric Berry has been a bad contract. There's no other way to explain it. Now, maybe Berry will be great the next couple of years, and that'll be different. But up to this point, that was a horrible contract. And kind of like the Gordon contract for the Royals. And we said at the time that was a bad deal. And we said at the time with Eric Berry, we said the same thing with Justin Houston. 6 years, $101 million. We said that's too much to give to a defensive end in this situation, or linebacker. And so far, we look right on that. Not saying that we can be a GM and can do everything right. Just saying these are not judgments in hindsight. We said it at the time. Because a lot of times these long-term deals, we're safe to say every long-term deal is a mistake, and we're going to be right more often when we're wrong, just the way it is in sports. Some long-term deals do work out. The Chiefs are talking about reports that they will probably give Patrick Mahomes a $200 million contract extension after next season. A lot of people are missing the story here. It's after next season. They're not going to do it this offseason. It would be they would set it up to where it would be after the 2020 season, which he would not be a free agent. He's a five-year window as a rookie. Chiefs wouldn't have to do anything after next season if they don't want to at Patrick Mahomes' contract. But it sounds like they want to. And be smart. You want to lock the guy up.
Yeah.
And probably the sooner you can lock him up saves you a little bit of money perhaps as well.
That's the one you don't mess around with.
Yes, you take care of that. I've had people say, well, Mahomes gets tired of this horrible defense. He's just going to leave Kansas City. No, he's not. The Chiefs will keep Patrick Mahomes. Name the last NFL organization that let go of a franchise quarterback in his prime. That's because there is none.
Yeah, that's why we're silent right now.
Favre retired, then the Packers let him go. They had Aaron Rodgers. Favre wasn't in his prime. Peyton Manning was let go, coming off a major injury, missed a season. He was not in his prime. Many quarterbacks have been great for a team, eventually ended a career somewhere else. Joe Montana was not in his prime when the Niners let him go, and they had Steve Young, who also was a Hall of Famer. There has never been a time where the National Football League, a team has been dumb enough to have a franchise quarterback in his prime and let him go. They will throw the entire Brinks financial truck. They'll back it up. They'll bring in a plane and drop money on top of the guy. They will keep him. You do not find quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes at all, maybe ever, just like Aaron Rodgers and others. You give them whatever you need to give them to keep them as part of your team, and you'll figure out the financial part later. Does that mean you're going to have to skimp in some areas? Yeah, maybe you can't give Dee Ford a long-term deal because you're going to have to give Patrick Mahomes a lot of money in the near future. Maybe that's why you don't give Travis Kelce a long-term deal in the near future, because Kelce is 29. He only had two catches, 23 yards, and I can see Kelce, you know, kind of eventually breaking down. He takes a lot of hits. You know, Tyreek Hill, do you give him a long-term deal? I mean, he's been a model citizen since his problems off the field in college. Do you give him a long-term extension? I would say probably because he's younger and he's only getting better. But once again, that would be a question for the Chiefs. Would the Chiefs be better off saving money and letting go of a few players, which they're still going to be on the hook for a lot of dead money on the cap and everything? But, you know, do you walk away from a Justin Houston? Do you walk away from a Dee Ford? Do you walk away from an Eric Berry? You know, or is there somebody else, Alan Bailey? You know, who do you walk away from somebody? Do you walk away from an offensive lineman that gets an offer from somebody else and you don't want to match that offer sheet because you've got a young guy in the McKenzie kid that they drafted that was a defensive lineman that turned into offensive lineman they really like a lot, and you slide him into the offensive line? Chiefs got lots of questions, and everybody says it's pretty simple. This is what the Chiefs have to do this offseason. You fire Bob Sutton, which that should be the first thing you do, and there are reports the Chiefs are discussing changing their defensive staff, and if they do not get rid of Bob Sutton, then it doesn't matter to me what they do coaching-wise. They need to find a new defensive coordinator. The fact that the Patriots, and it was reported right during the broadcast, that they weren't worried about making changes to their calls at the line of scrimmage because they knew, had a good idea what the Chiefs were going to run, and were comfortable with whatever play they called in the huddle, tells you the Chiefs should not keep Bob Sutton. I mean, the Patriots had him figured out, for crying out loud. He's not aggressive enough. His team players don't seem to get a lot better, although, you know, Ford and Jones probably got better this year. But still, his defenses get worse as a whole. They changed personnel in the offseason. They said it was personnel issue, not coaching issue. And what do you know? The Chiefs are even worse with the new personnel. That's either on the GM or that's on the defensive coordinator, and they're not going to cut loose the GM this early into his tenure, Brett Veach. So you got to move on from Bob Sutton. And I'm going to tell you right now, if the Chiefs move on from Bob Sutton without me even knowing who the replacement is, I am automatically, that loss to the Patriots doesn't feel as bad because now I'm excited about a new defensive coordinator. Yeah. Just like I was excited about Patrick Mahomes becoming the quarterback. But if the Chiefs decide to keep and retain Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator, now I'm going to sit here and go, that was our chance. That was the chance. And we're not gonna overcome the deficiencies of Bob Sutton in this defense in the future if we keep him. And it's going to be a big, it's going to start me on that doom and gloom thinking again, not for the whole organization, but for the defense. You can't have the 31st best defense and win a Super Bowl. It's never been done. It's never been done. The worst defense ever to win a Super Bowl was the Giants, and they were ranked 27th. And that was, they got hot at the end of the year in the playoffs. And they got a couple of fortuitous bounces, obviously, to win a Super Bowl. So first things first, you've got to unload Bob Sutton. You got to find a new, I think a younger mind, a defensive, you know, Jack Del Rio's out there. He's not a younger mind. Steve Spagnuolo is not a young guy, but he's not super old either. Those are two guys that come to my mind that have experience as defensive coordinator. But there could easily be a guy out there that's a defensive coach somewhere else that isn't a defensive coordinator that you really like. And I just want to see a guy come into Kansas City that has a fresh voice, who has different schemes, who is not predictable, who is willing to try to change some things and be creative, and maybe it doesn't work, but at least try stuff. I want to see a guy that comes to Kansas City to lead this defense because there's talent. Chris Jones, Dee Ford, Justin Houston. I think Anthony Hitchens is not as bad as he played this year. Eric Berry, if he's healthy, certainly talented. I think Charvarius Ward could be a talented corner in this league. There is talent on this defense, for crying out loud. There is a lot of talent on this defense, and that's another indictment on why Bob Sutton should not be the defensive coordinator anymore. He's had 6 years, and every single time in the playoffs, the defense has had a collapse that's cost him a playoff win. It's as simple as that. And so he can't be trusted to lead this defense and help the Chiefs get over the hump. How many times does Andy Reid have to go through playoff heartbreak because of his defense not doing their job? And I think, and I said this last year, the Chiefs lost to the Titans, and after the game on the show, I said, you know what, it might be a silver lining here. If the Chiefs move away from Alex Smith and give the keys to Patrick Mahomes, then this might be a loss, a blessing in disguise. And I also said, get rid of Bob Sutton, that would be the perfect twofer. Well, we got one out of two, which I was willing to live with, but not happy about, but willing to live with it because at least one thing happened. Because if they had kept Alex Smith, I would have gone bonkers. And that wasn't because Alex Smith wasn't a good quarterback. It's just that I knew it would be the same result. Well, okay, you did one of the two things right. You changed quarterbacks. Well, now this offseason is up to you to get this one right. And Andy, you have to do it. You have to move quickly here because there are some good defensive coordinators, former defensive coordinators, that are being looked at for other jobs with the Browns and others. Del Rio's being looked at by the Browns. The Bengals are looking at Steve Spagnuolo and Del Rio. Those are guys that are on my list. Todd Bowles would have been great. The Buccaneers are smart. Grabbed him quickly after he was fired as head coach of the Jets. So if you want to find an experienced defensive coordinator that you really like, the Chiefs need to move very quickly and let go of Bob Sutton. Now, if there's a younger guy out there that they want to elevate from a defensive backs coach, defensive coordinator, and they don't think anybody's going hard after the guy they like, they could maybe drag this out a little bit longer. The best case scenario would be Bob Sutton to go to Andy Reid in his office and say, listen, Andy, I'm holding you back. I'm preventing you from getting this done. I have been a problem the last couple of years. And Andy can you go, Bob, gee golly, I love you. And you know what? We're going to get through this thing together. It'll make it even sweeter that we overcome all this and shut up the critics. That's loyalty. It's blind loyalty. It's being a friend. This business, you can't be all about being friends. We know this. Great guys, super people get fired all the time in professional sports and in college athletics. Bob Sutton either needs to resign or Andy Reid's got to have the guts to fire Bob Sutton. And if Andy Reid doesn't have the guts to fire Bob Sutton and move on with a new defensive coordinator, he is torpedoing the Patrick Mahomes era, and he's also preventing himself from winning a Super Bowl. And that's the thing missing off of Andy Reid's resume is winning a Super Bowl. He's been the one with the Eagles. He's been to lots of conference championship games, now six, I believe, and he's 1-5. But he has never won the Super Bowl. You have to move on. You moved on from Alex Smith. That was the right decision. Clearly, Andy Reid looks like a genius for making that move. It was clear in practice. Mahomes was ready. Isn't it clear, based on 6 years of a body of work, that this defense isn't going anywhere with Bob Sutton as a head coach? And you've already tried to change the personnel play card. It didn't work. The common denominator in each of these last 6 years, with the defense continuously getting worse statistically to where it's the second worst defense in football, how can you be the second worst defense in football and have the best pass rush? Explain that to me. Because you're god-awful against the run. Okay? You got a bad secondary. Those pass rushers aren't good against the run, although Houston isn't bad. What are you going to do? You're going to get 11 new defensive starters? No. You got talent to work with. Have a new voice come in and work with Houston, Ford, Jones, and others. Have a new voice come in. Okay, so you fire Bob Sutton, you find a new defensive coordinator, and you shuffle your defensive staff under Bob Sutton. I'm cool with that. That's the first step you got to do. Second step, you've got to address your defense in regards to personnel. You have to find more talent, especially in the secondary, and you've got to find probably a linebacker that's better against the run than Ragland and Hitchens. You've got to find a defensive run stopper that's a stud, which is hard to find. I know it's hard to find. They're going to have to address that in the draft or free agency. And that's why we come back to D Ford. If you tie yourself up a long-term deal or even a franchise tag with $16 million on Ford against the cap, it could prevent you from making those moves in free agency to help your defense. I'm not saying free agency is the answer. Maybe they find a couple of decent discounted bargains in free agency to help the depth of this defense. But the Chiefs cannot probably go into next season with Daniel Sorensen, Eric Berry, Charvarius Ward, and Steven Nelson as their starting secondary. They have problems at safety. Sorensen's not a pure safety. He's more of a hybrid linebacker. Berry, we can't count on him being healthy. The Chiefs got to find, maybe Armando Watts is that guy who got hurt and they drafted. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're okay there. They got to find another corner, and they got to find an athletic, tall corner. And I would like Steven Nelson to be more of a nickel corner. They got Kendall Fuller. He's okay. Charvarius Ward, I think, can be a good player. He showed flashes of that. Tall, rangy corner. And the Chiefs, I do still think you can't ignore the offensive side of the ball. Damian Williams, I don't think, is a 25 carry back. Spencer Ware, I don't know if he can stay healthy. I think the Chiefs do have to consider looking at a running back in the draft at some point. Mm. And you also probably have to look at, you know, like maybe offensive linemen too. I think Brett Veach is going to spend a lot of time drafting a lot of defensive players. But here's the problem. Brett Veach is the GM. How did any defensive draft pick he made this year have really any impact? Naughty made a few plays.
Yeah.
Breland Speaks really didn't do much. He looks like an oversized, slow defensive end.
Yeah,
who doesn't make any
not
plays.
A place for him in that defense.
I think that was a bad pick. Yeah. And the Chiefs traded up a couple times in the draft. You give up picks to move up a few slots later in the draft, third, fourth, fifth round draft picks. I don't think Brett Veach had a good draft. So the Chiefs got a draft to dress their defense personnel-wise, let go of Bob Sutton, probably franchise tag D Ford, take care of Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill, balance the cap, and then you're on your way to winning a Super Bowl next year.